and welcome to this week's edition of Legal Line right here on the Legal Line Network. This is Bob Pittman. Glad to have you with us as we make our weekly venture into the mysterious realm of the law. And it gets more mysterious, I think, with every passing day. Sometimes it makes me laugh, and sometimes it brings me to tears, but it's our legal system. All right, we're here each and every week hoping to point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems, demystify the law, and maybe translate the legalese just a little bit. I've got to be careful because, you know, the Bar Association could come down on me like a ton of bricks if I was to freely translate the legalese, I mean, so that you could understand it 100%. I could be out of a job. That'd be terrible, wouldn't it? That'd be awful. You can give us a call each week at 253-471-9694. If you're listening to us on the Bobcast, you can call us on Wednesday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific time. No longer daylight, I guess. Pacific Standard Time. Or daylight time if you're calling later in the year. Again, 253-471-9694. 94 is the number to call. You can also email a question in to Jeff during the week. It's just Jeff, J-E-F-F, Jeff at bobpittman.com. Send your questions in. If you have a suggestion for a topic, too, we always like to hear about that. So be sure to email us a topic suggestion as long as it's something legal, right? At least it has to be close to legal, right? Close to legal. Got a couple of fun questions coming up later that were emailed in, and a Supreme Court case that just came out today that we'll mention a little bit later in the program. But we're going to get started with an email that came in to me the other day, and then we have a guest here to help us with deciphering and hopefully comments on what we can do about this kind of email. So here comes the email to me. So it's email coming from Steve. We're not going to say what Steve. So Steve supposedly sends me this email and says, I'm writing this message to you with sadness. I traveled to London for a short vacation, and unfortunately for me, I was mugged at a knife point last night at the park of the hotel where I lodged, and all cash, credit cards, and cell phone were all taken away. I have reported the robbery to the police, but they are yet to find the muggers. My flight leaves in less than 12 hours from now, and I am having problems paying my hotel bills. The hotel manager won't let me leave until I settle the bills. Please, I need a loan of £1,850 from you to return back home, and I want you to get back to me if you can help. Steve. So I get this email from somebody I know, supposedly. I mean, I know him, but supposedly it's from him. And I think to myself, this just sounds a little bit fishy. So I check with Steve, and sure enough, Steve is just fine. And he's not over in London. He's not stuck being held hostage in a hotel room or whatever might be occurring. And what has happened is that Steve has been, hijacked. And so with me today is Corey Sullins. Welcome, Corey.
Thanks, Bob.
And Corey, as most of you know, is with Mobius Technical Solutions. And he actually hangs out and helps us out quite a bit, which we appreciate, by the way.
You're welcome.
That's great. But I wanted to ask you to come by it because of your expertise and being a nice guy, too, just to talk about what on earth happened here with Steve, do you think? It's such a strange thing.
Well, it's actually pretty common. More than likely, his email account was hacked, and probably along with that, quite a few other of his accounts, and one thing that's interesting about it is, as I was listening to you read it, it sounded like some of the sentences were a little awkward or some strangely placed
right.
words in there, and
yes.
that's actually very typical of email scams and phishing, and that's one of the ways that you can tell that it's not from the person that it says it's coming from. Is often these these scams and these emails are written by people overseas, and English isn't their native language. So that's one easy way to really spot what's going on.
So here's a tip to bad guys. Hire somebody who speaks English really well.
Well, they do that too, actually. I mean, this is it's become a big business for people. You know, in Africa, in Russia, China, a lot of these countries, and they even do hire translators, but often they don't have a native English speaker. They may have somebody who's a translator, and that's why a lot of times when you see some of these words, that it may be technically correct, but it sounds a little odd, and it's not how a native English speaker would say something, and that's normally a pretty clear indicator that it's not a genuine or valid email. And honestly, a lot of these emails that come out, these emails that are called phishing, which appears from, you know, it appears to be coming from your bank or from PayPal or someone, right. And they want you to log in and verify your account information.
I've gotten those.
Yeah. Often the images will look authentic, like it'll have a authentic, you know, logo of Bank of America or whoever, but there will be a lot of grammatical errors as well, and that's another clear indicator. But anytime you just, you know, even what I do, even if I think that it's a valid email from my bank or from someone who wants me to verify something, or they say there's a, you know, an urgent account update needed, what I'll do is I will go and I will call the published number of that bank or that institution, because if it really is something important, or if there's like a problem with your account, when you call them, the number that you have on file for them, they'll be able to tell you, because it'll be in their system.
Well, in fact, if it's a credit card, or if it's a debit, you know, bank account with a debit card, there should be a phone number on the back of the card.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can call that number.
Right.
And that's a really good idea. I had someone was in the office the other day and had said that they had gotten an email. No, was it an email or a phone call? Maybe it was a phone call from someone who was supposedly their grandson, and they were stuck in London or someplace, or Canada, and they'd been arrested, and they desperately needed some money for bail or something like that. And I guess the grandmother was getting ready to go send the money by Western Union.
Oh.
And her son or daughter has happened to find out and stopped her.
Wow.
Oh, no, I take it back. It was the people that might have been Western Union. It was probably at one of the grocery stores, I guess. And then they brought it up to her and said, you know, are you sure you want to send this? I think it was like $5,000 or something.
Right.
And they stopped her at the place, at the store, and tried to get her to verify everything. And it turned out, of course, it was a scam.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, it's the same old story, just a different medium. It's all about conning and grifting, and the technical term that we use for it in the industry is called social engineering. So it's basically convincing somebody that you're an authority or a trusted source to get them and give them a situation that maybe kind of distresses them, so that they, you know, they don't think clearly, and they will go ahead and just, you know, hurry and react kind of in an emotional way.
Well, good point. Yeah, because here the urgency in the message here is that he's got a plane to catch in less than 12 hours.
Right.
And he's stuck at the hotel trying to pay the bill.
Exactly. And it's technology just makes this much more available for people to do this and reach many more people. So
question things, obviously. That's good. Now, this actually was Steve's email.
Right.
And he told me they had taken over. I talked to him later because I called him and told him I'd been out visiting law firms in town trying to raise money for him. I couldn't resist. And so I said, you know, I'd been downtown, I'd been to all the major firms, and I was just getting ready to get the money. And I'd gathered about $7.38 for him. And he didn't think it was all that funny because he told me that, indeed, his email had been taken over.
Yeah.
So just imagine, all your saved emails, everything, are all now belong to this new person, whoever this is.
Absolutely. I mean, we see it all the time, and there's quite a few different ways that this happens, and one of them is people are not using secure passwords. That's one of the main reasons that happens. You know, people will often use a name or a birth date or something like that, a common word out of the dictionary that is sort of short. You know, no matter how long it is, never use a word that can be found in the dictionary.
Or 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yes, or password, or, you know, any of the, there's a whole list, you know. Often when our clients forget their passwords, I have a whole list I go to of common passwords that people use if I need to. And it's amazing how quickly with common technology, an average desktop computer can crack a password.
Wow.
So there's a couple different ways it happens. There's what's called a dictionary attack, where it'll run through basically a large library of words that it has, essentially a dictionary, and try every single one of them, try every iteration of capital and lowercase letters. It'll also do numbers, strings of numbers, and the computer can do this amazingly quick. I normally, when I give presentations about this, I have a little graph that shows just how quickly a computer can crack these passwords.
Wow.
Just an average desktop computer. If it's, I can't remember the exact stat, but if it's just a regular 10 character long password, that's a regular word, the computer can get it in about 4 seconds.
Wow.
So,
that's scary.
Yeah.
So you think you've been really creative and come up with this word.
Yeah. Yep. And you know what's even scarier about that is when they crack it. Now, you most likely have used that same password on all your accounts.
Yeah, because people have a hard time remembering all
exactly.
these things, so they use it over and over and over.
Right, Amazon, your bank, unless the systems force you to use a more complex password.
Sure.
And then you're probably just using a variation of that same password, right?
Probably so.
Yeah, so that is that's a big serious issue. So not only just getting your email hacked, but if Steve used the same password for his bank accounts, for everything else, not only that, but if he has a lot of his bank information in his email account,
you might.
All sorts of stuff. If he's even talking about financial transactions with people, and those, you know, that information was contained in some of those emails.
Very possible.
You know, now the person that's in his account has access to all of that as well.
That is very possible.
And it is, sorry to cut you, it is very difficult to get your account back, especially if you're using a free service like Gmail, Yahoo, or Hotmail. Not because the companies don't want to help you, it's just because they're inundated with requests and this type of stuff all the time. So let's
talk about what is a way to come up maybe with a more secure password. Is there something, would you give any tips to people on ways to think of coming up with a relatively secure password, or at least a more secure password, so it isn't cracked in 4 seconds?
Right. You know? Yeah. Normally, the best way to do it is just a little, some basics on passwords and what you want to shoot for. Is you want at least 14 characters, a 14-character password that contains letters, uppercase and lowercase, symbols, and numbers.
Symbols, huh?
Yep. And the best way to do it is kind of to use a phrase. So Bob loves grilled cheese sandwiches, right? And then so...
How did you know?
Well, Bob, I take care of your computer stuff. I know all of
your... I guess so.
You then would you know, abbreviate words and then put in letters or numbers and symbols in for certain letters.
Oh,
and,
interesting. Yeah.
And so that basically it creates a very long password, or what we could call a passphrase. And it's not spelled normally.
Right.
You could use all sorts of different – there's a lot of different methods. And and after the show, when we post up the information on your website, I'll have some good links and some guides. There's also another really good resource that Microsoft puts out, and there's a few different companies that do this. It's called the Microsoft Password Checker, and so your listeners can just Google that or you know, search with Bing. Microsoft isn't paying me, but, you know, another option. look up Microsoft Password Checker.
Okay.
And it'll take you to their website, and you can just – it doesn't record anything.
Uh-huh.
You can just put in your password, and it'll tell you whether it's considered a strong password.
Interesting. That's great. And then if it isn't, you can obviously tweak it and play with it a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, you want to keep tweaking it and make sure that the bar is green and it says at least strong. And they'll give you some tips as well on how to create a strong password.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I just know that that so many people are using, you know, passwords that are just So, I mean, they're so easy to crack. I'm
yeah,
sure.
It's and true. I mean, yeah. And we see it all the time. And, yeah. And people, not only are they the worst case scenario, you know, they inconvenience their associates by having people respond and send money, which they're never going to get back.
No. In fact, I spent half a day getting the $7.38 back to the law firms. I mean,
oh, you intended on giving it back, or giving it? Oh.
Yeah, I did not go to Starbucks, and well, no, I did go to. I was looking for the people at Starbucks.
That should buy you half a drink at Starbucks.
Yeah, well, the person behind the counter said, "Oh, Bob, don't worry, I'll take that and make sure it gets back." And he gave me a coffee.
Oh.
So I don't know. I don't know what to say about it, but Steve, I tried.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, but you know, even considering that, the question is, how did his information get compromised? And there's a couple different ways. It could be that his computer has a virus or a Trojan, what's called a Trojan horse, which essentially is a piece of software that's malicious software that's put on your computer that gives open access to people that are doing no good or up to no good. So there's various ways that his information could have been compromised.
So some program like that could even attempt to capture passwords when you put them in. Is that possible?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what's called a keylogger. So anything that you type into your computer. You go to your bank's address, right? Well, the keylogger has you putting in your bank's address if you don't use it from like a favorite or something.
Yeah.
And then the next thing exactly that you're going to type in is your username and passwords.
Right.
So this throws up little flags for the program, and it communicates that information back to the people that are using it and putting it on there. And the thing about getting infected with a virus or one of these malicious programs nowadays is that, you know, previously these viruses were designed to wreak havoc and do, just destroy things.
So you knew something was wrong.
Exactly. Obviously. Now they're designed to make people money. So it's in their best interest to hide it from you so that you don't know that you're infected until something like this happens. So if this was the way that Steve was infected, all of his information, including on, you know, his computer, everything could be compromised that way as well.
Interesting. All right, so we're going to get people to take a look at the blog, too. We'll get some information later. And this is something that is critical for all of us to be doing, clearly. And I've got to sit back and rethink passwords. And, of course, the idea is you shouldn't use the same one for different different programs and stuff, should you? I mean,
you shouldn't. And,
it.
You know, it's difficult because there's sort of a middle ground from between being absolutely, you know, as security minded as you can and inconveniencing yourself, and just kind of, you know, just you got to pick somewhere in the middle. But there are some definitely some good tools out there that can help people, and one of them is called a password manager.
Okay.
So what this is a little application that even will run on people's smartphones, iPhones or Android phones or Blackberries, that help them remember their passwords. It's essentially a password vault. So all you have to do is assign a really complex password to open that program.
Right.
And then it has a list of all of your other passwords. And this helps when you have so many different accounts across, you know, so many different things using different usernames and passwords. It is impossible to remember them all.
I think it is. You know, that brings up a thought with me, though, when you're dealing with estate planning, people making out their wills and then people dying and so forth. People must die all the time with passwords that nobody would ever be able to figure out maybe or know because they haven't written them down anywhere. They haven't done the little password locker or whatever it is. And so that's something that I think people need to think about too. And where do you keep that kind of information? Well, this could be just the spot
because
then you just have the one really complex password to maybe keep in a secure location, perhaps.
That's absolutely correct, and even people that are aware of this, what they'll end up doing is keeping all of their usernames and passwords in a document or like a spreadsheet that they can password protect. But the problem with that is that these documents and spreadsheets are notoriously easy to crack.
Yeah.
So you don't want to keep all of your information in there. So using these programs is a really good it's a really good tool to do that. And you can back up the database as well. And that's something that people should be backing up all of their information anyway, in case they have a hardware failure or, you know, compromised information on their computer, a virus destroys things.
I'll have to give a little thought to the death part, though. That's because
sounds like a new service, Bob.
Yeah, it could be, you know. But I mean, I could see where, you know, if someone did have a kind of a master location, and then there was one password to get in there. If you could somehow secure that password, I don't know that you'd put it in a safe deposit box, but I suppose you could. But you'd have to have someone else who could get into the safe deposit box in case you died or you were just incapacitated. And
right.
That's something to really think about, though.
Absolutely.
As to how you would get that. Because I could see where you could design one password that's really complex, but you would remember that one. But if you're just remembering it and you're now unconscious or dead, it's going to be very difficult, other than maybe through a seance or something, if you died, to try to get that password back up.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we experience this all the time with our business clients. We provide a backup service for all of their information. It's all encrypted, which means that if they don't have their passphrase or their lawyer doesn't have it or somebody doesn't have a copy of it, then and they can't remember their security questions, then they can't get their information back. So, but that is absolutely something that we work into the plan is who's going to keep copies of the passphrase, you know, have it saved somewhere else, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah. A lot of our clients like to use their lawyers to keep a copy of it as well. So
yeah, I suppose I'd have, you know, being a lawyer, I have to think about that. Is that a good idea or not? I think that the lawyer would have to have some kind of a secure setting for storing that information
himself or
herself, though, too. Because I know it's going to come as a shock, but just just leaving stuff with your lawyer isn't necessarily the best idea. That's terrible to say, but you know, I think a lot of law firms don't do a proper job backing up their own systems.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that they really need to, and small businesses in general need to be doing a much better job. I think taking care of their of all their data. I mean, you look at how much information has to be stored.
Well,
for a business, or
absolutely.
A law practice,
you're absolutely, and you're absolutely right. And look at how complex all of this is, though. And that's why, you know, just like we don't try and do our own estate planning stuff, we go to you.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't know it all.
No.
You know, you got to hire an expert, especially if what you're dealing with is very, very sensitive. And a lot of your, you know, if you're a business, a lot of your client information is very sensitive. And
that's true.
So that's why there are people like me out there that, that can help you take care of all of this stuff.
Now, if someone wanted to track you down, what kind of contact information would we have for them?
Well, you can go to our website, which is Mobius, MOBIUS-technical.com. Or you can send an email to info@Mobius-technical.com. Or you can give us a call at 253-353-2887.
You know what we'll have to do? We should, I don't know if we have, do we have a link on our links page? I don't think we do.
No,
we'll have to ask Jeff to fix us up with a link, and that way if anybody wants to check, we'll have within a day or so, we'll have that link up on our links page. And, you know, we've got our recommended reading list at when you go to bobpittman.com and then go over to the Legal Line page, you can look for recommended reading. We've got all kinds of fun books there. But then there's also the links page, and it has a number of really fun, kind of interesting links. And we'll put up the Mobius link, too, for people if they want to check in with you. Because there are so many things that we need to do when it comes to computer security and also just keeping our units clean, so to speak, so they're not all gummed up with all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways that your information can be compromised and that you can be put at risk. And
absolutely.
The information that we post up on your website after the show, we'll talk a lot about that, and there will be some helpful guides, and
there'll
be a link to us if you know, we're more than happy to help anybody secure their information and get their business set up so that not only do they not risk their clients' information, but if something was to happen, even there a fire in the building or something like that, they could recover all of their information needed to run their business. So.
Well, you remember when we first signed up to get our service going, We hadn't actually gotten in the system yet. And that night, someone downstairs had a malfunction or something with the dishwasher and tried to, not on purpose, but tried to burn the building down by the accident. And, and we thought afterwards, wow, that was a close one.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I mean, it happens all the time. It's kind of like driving a car without car insurance or, you know, owning a house without homeowners insurance. Yeah. You know, you only find out that you really need it until after it's too late.
That's really true. Yeah. And I know we wouldn't think of going without car insurance. I hope not anyway. We wouldn't think of not having renter's insurance, homeowner's insurance, all the different programs. And yet a lot of times we go about our business and don't do the basic protections on things like something as important, especially to a business, as our computer systems.
Right. And, absolutely.
You know, I'm thinking that if you were really doing it right, I guess what you would do is each day that when correspondence comes in and different things come in, they would all be scanned that day, wouldn't they? Because, you know, if the building burns down, you've got a lot of paper that's still going to go up in smoke that has never been committed to the computer system.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if you were really designing it and really being efficient, you know, take me, for example, if we here at the office, if we automatically scanned everything that came in during the day and then assigned it off to the correct file, there'd be less of a risk of a problem like a fire or something taking out even your current, you know, work that you're doing, you know, work in progress, if you will.
Absolutely. And that's,
I'm just thinking out loud as we're
well,
going.
It's funny you should say that.
Yeah.
It's very common, especially now in the legal and the financial industry, for companies to start using digital filing systems and digital document solutions.
Yeah.
And then backing, we do that for a couple companies already. You know, there's a lot of different choices and vendors out there.
Sure.
But also, just to clear out space, there are a lot of companies that are renting lots of extra and leasing lots of extra space just to hold all of their files and their file cabinets. And there are services out there that will scan all of that in for you and digitize everything. And then we keep it safe by backing it up every single day. And, you know, essentially what that comes down to is if there was a fire or some sort of destruction of your office or your buildings, you could literally just go to Starbucks and set up shop the next day. And
you really could.
Yeah. And we've seen it. And it the need for this was really hammered home during Hurricane Katrina. All of these, you know, unfortunately, all of this destruction that it wreaked, it wiped out a lot of businesses that even would have been viable and had a market afterwards after the recovery, but they just weren't in business anymore because all of their information was missing.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Boy, there's so many things we have to work on. We're going to have you come back and give us a tip every so often on some of this.
Well, I'm happy to do it. And just quickly, I'll kind of run down the most common ways that your information can be compromised, and that's lack of virus protection on your computers and spyware and malware, which is these are different from viruses. They're pieces of software that run in the background of your computer collecting information about you and compromising your system so other people can get into it.
Doesn't sound good.
No. not keeping your operating systems and your programs up to date. So that's like critical Windows security updates, these types of things. Often people don't realize that their systems, you know, there's a bug or whatever, something failed and they haven't been keeping updated for a really long time. So, and especially if you're a business, you know, that needs to be actively managed by an IT professional. And there's a lot of solutions out there to do it.
So on that particular one, it's not just because you want to have the most current up-to-date program. It's really a safety and security issue as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I don't think I realized.
Yeah, there's, you know, with all of these security updates all the time, it's because people are continuously finding loopholes in the programs and in the, essentially the big castle gate, you know, to keep out the bad guys. There's always a new loophole discovered. So.
Interesting.
You know, as we continue to build a better mousetrap, the mouse gets smarter and finds ways around it. So it's a constant struggle. So that's why it's really important to keep everything as up to date as possible.
Yeah.
The other possible scenarios of having your information compromised is accessing your accounts from a public terminal, like an internet cafe or
maybe you're traveling and you go to the hotel.
Exactly, and it has a business, you know, little mm-hmm. business area and public computer, so you can check your stuff. I mean, that's absolutely, it's very common for those, you know, no matter how hard that these companies, the hotel companies and everybody else tries, someone will always get in there and put something on the network that will
sure.
capture that information. Hmm. And then, of course, as we talked about, just not having secure enough passwords. There's right. a lot of other ways, but these are the top ways that your information can get compromised.
Oh, that's great. That's really helpful.
Well, good.
I just think it's so important.
I'm sure we could actually talk for about 10 hours on this yeah. stuff just because it's so in depth.
Well, I think what I'd like to invite people to do is we'll have Corey back, of course, and we've been talking to Corey Sullins from Mobius Technical Solutions, and we'll put his information up on the website, bobpittman.com, so you'll be able to track it, and he's going to have some other information there too. But we'll have you come back if it's okay from time to time, maybe, and update us on some computer stuff.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Thanks for having me, Bob. And, I appreciate it.
Appreciate your being there to help everybody. And if people have a question, I mean, you can also email us and we can either pass it along. But if you have questions for the future that you'd like to hear about, let us know too. You can always email Jeff. So it's just J-E-F-F, Jeff at bobpittman.com, and let them know what you'd like to hear about, and we'll try to arrange that for a future Bobcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's fascinating yeah. how integrated all of this stuff is, the legal portion and
yeah.
the information technology.
Yeah.
I mean, as time goes on, just technology is
yeah.
more and more integrated into our lives, so this
That's
is
right.
really important.
Well, you know, one of the things we may try to do, and it may be a ways off, but we're going to watch for some opportunities maybe with some of the trade shows and stuff and see if we can't arrange to have a legal line presence there. And, of course, we won't try to do a live broadcast from there, but what we'll do is have people be able to come and ask us questions, and we'll record everything and then do our normal Wednesday afternoon stream, and we'll bring that in from the location. That might be fun too, and we could do a segment on computer issues as well.
So yeah, that'd be great.
Be fun too. Good. So let's say thanks to Corey Sullins for hanging out with us for a little bit. And what I'd like to do is slip out just for a moment, and then we're going to get Diane in, and she's got a couple of questions that came in. And I do have a case I want to mention that just came out today by the issued by the Washington State Supreme Court. But let's slip out and hear a word from the referral services. One of the best legal bargains has to be the bar-sponsored lawyer referral services. For about $35, maybe $45 or so, you can have a half-hour consultation with an attorney who works in your area of concern. So, for example, if you have a real estate issue, you'll meet with a real estate attorney. If you have questions about a contract, you'll meet with an attorney who speaks the right version of legalese. Keep in mind that you have a half hour to discuss your legal problem. This is not a lot of time, but usually enough to determine if you need or want to engage a lawyer further. But you must use your time efficiently. Before you meet with the lawyer, write out a brief statement of the facts and write down your questions for the lawyer. If the questions are written down, you'll probably remember to ask them. When you meet with the lawyer, don't spend time talking about other things. Don't talk about the game last night or the weather. You have a limited amount of time, and you need to talk about your legal problem. In King County, you can call 206-267-7010. In Pierce County, you can call 253-383-3432. If you go to the website for the Washington State Bar Association, you'll find more information in the For the Public section. Look under How to Find Legal Help, and then under Lawyer Referral Services. And, of course, you can always go to bobpittman.com. And we continue with this week's edition of Legal Line right here on the Legal Line Network. This is Bob Pittman. Glad to have you with us as we make our way through the mysterious realm of the law on a Wednesday afternoon, although you could be listening on a Sunday or a Monday or a Thursday, whatever day on the Bobcast. Always check out the archive. You can check for past shows, look for ones. Maybe you want to hear the show we did a while back on neighbor law. Maybe you want to hear now former Chief Justice Gary Alexander's comments, which were really insightful and interesting. So take a look at the Legal Line archive. Just go to bobpittman.com, head over to the Legal Line page, and look for the archive. And of course, we broadcast live every Wednesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific time. So be sure to check us out either during the live broadcast. You can give us a call, of course, during the broadcast at 253-471-9694. I want to say hello to all of the folks in the armed forces around the world. We now are able to broadcast throughout the world. It's kind of fun. And I want to say how much we appreciate all the folks in the armed forces. And, of course, coming up tomorrow on Veterans Day. And so I guess just kind of on our minds anyway, in general, but especially as we get to Veterans Day. So we've got I've got a case I want to bring up in a moment. Just a quick comment on it. But Diane got a couple of questions in during the week, and maybe you can let us know what are people asking about.
Well, we have Susan from St. Louis.
Hey,
Missouri,
St. Louis.
It sounds
all right.
Like.
All right.
She wants to know if she can stop paying taxes when she turns 100. She is 98 now and is looking forward to some tax relief. Apparently, her aunt, who died at 99, told her that she could stop paying taxes when she hit 100. I don't know about that, but go ahead and talk about it. But be sure to include our discount.
That's right. You know, if it were up to me, I would say at 100 you can stop paying income taxes. But unfortunately, nobody has asked me to render my opinion on that in terms of at least an opinion that means anything. In other words, Congress passing a statute. Unfortunately, even though you turn 100, you still have to continue paying your taxes. Now, if you're a little tongue-in-cheek here, I mean, I guess what would the consequences be? Let's say at 100, can you imagine the newspapers? You'd be on the Today Show, I guess, too, if you stopped paying at 100 and they were actually out trying to arrest a 100-year-old tax evader. I don't know. But no, you can't stop paying taxes. You don't even get an extra discount. I mean, I know your senior discount that we have at the office, of course, is my favorite. It's at 95 is when we offer a senior discount.
Well, we've had a couple people actually use
that. This is true.
So not quite so funny.
I think one of them even drove over on their own. You know, some people at 95 most people, I think, who make it to 95 are doing pretty darn well. And so I wish I could say that you don't have to pay taxes at 100. I'm trying to think what you could do. I guess you could, I don't know. There's just not much you can do, unfortunately. You just got to keep paying those taxes. I think they're going to get higher, too.
Wow.
All right, another question?
Okay. Jim wants to change his last name to Gaga. He says that he thinks he'll get better service and maybe some upgrades if people think he's Lady Gaga's brother. He heard the call from a few weeks ago about name changes, but wasn't sure what to do.
Oh, boy. All right. So that's Jim, who's, you know, I haven't run across anybody with that last name, I have to say, so there probably won't be too many conflicts. And, of course, Lady Gaga is terrific, of course. We saw her we were watching her a little bit on TV the other day. And kind of an interesting person. It's interesting to hear people talk rather than just sing. And she had some interesting comments. I'm sure a lot of people would have interesting comments. But name change. There is actually at our website one of our links. If you go to the Legal Line page again and look for links, you'll notice there is a name change discussion through King County District Court that's up there, even with a form. Now, for our friend Jim, though, who's thinking about changing his last name to Gaga to try to be Lady Gaga's relative or brother, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I worry a little bit because one of the things you can't do is change your name for fraudulent purposes. And I don't know if I would call that fraud. I guess if all you were doing was calling into the maybe a nice restaurant and saying, you know, this is Jim Gaga, my sister and I want to come down and have dinner. I don't know if I'd go so far as to call that fraud. I don't think the prosecutor, I think they're pretty busy and they wouldn't want to take that up. But it's a little troublesome, I guess. And here's what I would say is don't go change your name legally, but maybe test drive the name for a while and see what you think. Because one of the rules is you can change your name to anything you want and just start calling yourself that name as long as your intent is not to defraud anybody. And I guess that's where I have a little bit of a hang-up with our friend Jim. But again, if he just uses it, and he would say probably that, you know, they just do nice things to me some places. And I wonder how many people would really think that Jim is Lady Gaga's brother. I don't know, maybe if he had a girlfriend or someone who would dress up like Lady Gaga and go with him, maybe that would be, I don't know. I'm not sure. I think, Jim, we're going to have to let you go on that one. Let us know what happens, and keep an eye out, everybody, for someone in a restaurant who appears to be or may be claiming to be Lady Gaga's brother. All right, too much fun. We try to have fun on the program, too, so that was a good one, Jim. All right, hey, comment on a case just came out. Has everybody seen those cases? Oh, not the cases, but the TV show. What is it? To Catch a Predator, I think it's called, where the people are really bad. Of course, doing this, they seem really stupid sometimes to me too, but very bad. I mean, I'm not. It's awful, but we've seen that. I think a lot of us have passed it by or maybe watched it from time to time on TV. Well, here's our own Washington State. You know, kind of To Catch a Predator show, but it made it all the way to the Supreme Court. It is a case involving an internet sting operation, and I just came out today, just filed and issued this morning from the Washington State Supreme Court, and you can find it. You know, all these cases are published, and when they come out, they're available to everybody. In the public, anybody can go online and pick them up. We'll have to look at putting up maybe a link. I get the cases as they come out, and anybody can sign up to do that. But here's the case. It's the fellow's name is Mittal Patel. I may be mispronouncing, but and of course it's a published case, and it's the state of Washington versus Mittal Patel. And so here's what, in a nutshell, what happened. Mittal Patel was convicted of attempted second-degree rape of a child. Very serious case. He was caught in an internet sting operation conducted by the Spokane police. So as part of this operation, a Spokane police detective posed as a fictitious 13-year-old girl and chatted with the defendant over an online instant messaging service. Following a sexually explicit conversation, the defendant agreed to meet the girl at her apartment for sex. So when the defendant arrived at the apartment, he knocked on the door, and he was immediately arrested by the police. And we're all probably cheering and saying, hey, that's good. But anyway, he came in and was urging the court, basically, to hold that in order to convict someone of attempted rape of a child, the state must always prove that there was an actual underage victim. Interesting. I mean, just from a legal aspect, or just a, you know, should there have been an actual 13-year-old who was, I guess, potentially at risk? And so the court takes this case and takes it on and says, we take the opportunity to review this, and here's what the court concludes. We should do this with you be the judge, I guess. We'll do some of those later. But anyway, what the court concludes is that generally to prove attempted child rape, the state must prove that the defendant intended to have sex, took a substantial step toward doing so, and that the intended victim was actually underage. However, the court says, where the victim is a fictitious character created by the police, the state may prove attempted rape of a child by establishing the defendant specifically intended to have sex with an underage person and took substantial steps toward that objective, as in this case where the defendant arranged online and actually went up to the apartment where the girl was supposed to be and knocked on the door. So the court says, baloney, you're going to jail. And so the court upheld the conviction of one Mittal Patel. So that's the case of the day, if you will. Yeah, I thought it was an interesting case, just that we've got these internet sting operations going on right here in Washington State. I suspect they're happening everywhere. And interesting to see what occurs. So we'll keep you posted on Supreme Court cases. There's some interesting discussion in the case, and there's actually a concurring opinion joined by a couple of the justices with some additional comments on that if you want to read that. We'll try to get a link up maybe where you can actually track this case. So we want to thank everybody for hanging out with us today on this week's edition of Legal Line. We're going to be back next week with more of your questions, and of course we have guests coming up. In fact, coming up in the this is November, right? So later in the month, early next month, we will have our segment with the attorney who represented the Green River Killer. Interesting comments. We'll talk about criminal defense. We're going to talk about the book that he has written about representing the Green River Killer. That'll be coming up, if not the end of this month, then beginning of next month. We'll keep you posted as to our progress on that. Other programs in the works, bankruptcy, creditor protection. We're looking at some of the home foreclosure information and so forth, so we'll be talking about more of that as we go along. And, of course, as the weeks and months go by, we'll be picking up more of your questions. You can always call us, as I say, during the program at 253-471-9694. You can email Jeff. It's just Jeff, J-E-F-F, at bobpittman.com during the week. Let us know what you'd like to hear about. Send in your questions. And we're going to ask you to stay in control of your legal affairs at least until next week. This is Bob Pittman for the Legal Line Network. See you soon.